This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food.
Beans, beans, the musical fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. The more you toot, the better you feel. So let's have beans for every meal. Ate my beans and they were loaded. Went to bed and they exploded.
Beans. They come in so many varieties, and they are absolutely delicious. One local farmer grows many varieties of beans, the kind that you eat the pod and all, like green beans, the kind you have to soak overnight, like pinto beans, and another surprising variety whose identity I'll let unfold through this episode. Beans are in a category called legumes. You may have also heard the term pulses. Legume refers to the plant. Pulses refers to the edible seed inside, whether eaten fresh with the pod, like sugar snap peas, or eaten without the pod, like dried beans. And today, we're going to look at three types of legumes, but only two are pulses. First, a little background on the farmer, and then off to the fresh beans first.
So my name is Ariella Gottschalk, and I am the owner of Halcyon Farms in Arroyo Grande.
Can I ask two questions, historical questions? Are you related to the Gottschalks of Santa Maria Town Center East?
No relation. I wish. I probably wouldn't be a farmer. I'd probably be vacationing in Tahiti right now if I was one of the members of that Gottschalk clan.
Okay. When I would come here with my dad, who lived in Santa Maria, for him to get his produce, it was not called Halcyon Farms.
Yes, so this farm used to be called the Routiz family farm. And about 3.5 years, actually almost 4 years ago now, my husband and I purchased that business from the Routiz family.
Well, congratulations. Were you farmers before that, or did you leave some high-power jobs in Los Angeles to come do farming?
No, I was actually a farmer before this, but I had a very sweet job. I worked for Transitions Mental Health Association. I was the program manager for Growing Grounds Farm in Santa Maria. And so I always like to say that I got to play being a farmer and get a salary at the same time. So I had the perfect training for being able to do this kind of job, but without any of the pain of crop failures, or, you know, I always got to get paid, so that was nice. And I've lived on this land above the farm now for 25 years. You know, I made friends with Jerry Routiz, and, you know, he gave me lots of advice. And so over the years in that relationship, we were able to transition really easily into me taking over from him.
Okay, so what do we got here?
Okay, so these are our Blue Lake green beans right here.
Pretty.
And they're looking really good. They're nice and dark green, long, straight. Just what you want in a green bean. Pick one. You can.
Can I just eat it right
taste.
Here?
Taste, yeah. And so those, I think they taste great raw.
Mmm, they taste great raw.
Yeah.
Yeah, straight from the field. How easy are these to grow?
Green beans are very easy to grow. You just put the seed in the ground and add water, and they hardly take any fertilizer. You don't see any white flowers here anymore. That's because all the flowers have turned into green beans. And so this is going to be quite a productive field of green beans. You know, we have three rows and we'll have like pounds and pounds and pounds of green beans.
Okay, and how long does this crop take to grow?
Green beans are pretty quick. They're like about 60 to 70 days, depending on the weather. Although they never seem to be ready when you want them to be ready, or they're ready before you want them to be ready. So it just, you know, depends on how hot it is sometimes and how nicely the sun is shining or not shining. But generally, it's about 60 to 70 days.
Okay, do you have more than one crop?
Yes, we plant green beans every 6 to 8 weeks in the summertime. And then we try to have a crop for Thanksgiving because everybody wants green beans at Thanksgiving. And I always struggle with timing for that because inevitably the weather's going to be somewhat weird at the end of this, you know, this time of year. It could get cold, it can get really hot. Last year I planted them, I thought it was the perfect timing, and they were ready 3 days after Thanksgiving. So this year I planted them 10 days earlier, and they're going to be ready probably for Halloween. So it's just the timing. Hopefully you just keep planting them and you just kind of like eventually will have them all the time. That's okay, what our plan is, to have them all the time.
Like, yeah, you could just like just in the summer. One row a week. Plant one row a week.
Yeah, well, we do three or four, but yes. Yeah, no, not every week. That would be overwhelming, but every like I said, every 3 to 4 weeks is good, or 4 to 6 weeks.
You mentioned the weather, the hot and cold. What we didn't mention is that you're here in Halcyon.
Yep.
How many miles from the water?
I think it's, we're like a mile as the crow flies.
Okay. Probably. And it's October, so it's not fog season anymore. How does summer affect your crops? Because if you need sun, I know it's not as foggy, but you have June gloom. Like, how does that affect your green beans?
So you plant them and then you hope to have a steady supply. And that's why we plant several crops, why we keep planting them. You want to make sure that you continue to have them so that you can put them on the table for people, because it's summer and everybody expects to have green beans. Everybody wants their green beans for the summertime.
And then Thanksgiving.
It's like, why do they make green beans a Thanksgiving thing? So yeah, I mean, weather is always a factor for us for sure. But then yes, green beans, because they like the heat, they can only be grown in the summertime. So we'll start them maybe March. We hope to have some sun and we hope that they do well. And they usually get enough sun to produce. Like I said, they're not a real difficult crop. They're pretty tolerant. You know, if we're lucky, we'll have them for Christmas if the weather holds up. You know, if we have warm days, which we lately have had very warm winters.
Yeah.
We have these hoop houses over here. There's six big ones right here that we use for our early crops where it's warmer. The plastic kind of keeps it more of a warm temperature in there. And so that can help with some of our early season or late season issues. We do have a crop of green beans that we just planted in that last hoop house that will hopefully be good. Maybe those might be our Thanksgiving green beans, actually, come to think of it, because everything's just growing so much faster than I expected it to right now. Last year was so much colder this time of year. So yeah, every year is different. One of the things that is great for us is we have so much diversity. So like, we don't have green beans. Well, you know, have corn. There's always something that we have. So if the weather turns, we don't lose our shirts, so to speak.
How much water do they take? I noticed that you have overhead sprinklers for this.
Yeah.
So two questions. How much water does it take and why overhead and not drip?
Mostly for convenience. The way we grow our green beans is we plant them in the middle of these corn crops. You can see we have two crops of corn on either side that were planted at the same time. So we'll plant three rows of corn, three or four rows of green beans, and another three rows of corn. And putting the sprinkler in the middle, it's just the right amount of water to get the whole block that we planted together. We do use a lot of drip irrigation here for our crops, but these green beans are pretty quick. So to put a drip line in, you're basically putting out a big row of plastic. That's an expense, and it's not going to be here for that long. Yes, it's more efficient for watering, but then you have to throw it away at the end of the crop because inevitably it's going to get cut and the gophers will chew it. The green beans, because they're so closely planted together with the corn, I actually think that the sprinklers are very efficient because there's not a lot of open ground here. All that water is definitely going right to the crops. There's not a lot of space for weeds to come up.
You're listening to KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm at Halcyon Farms in Arroyo Grande checking out legumes with Aurelia Gottschalk. Before we moved on from the fresh beans to the dried beans, I had a question about my favorite types of green beans. When and where is the best time to buy sugar snap peas and snow peas here on the Central Coast?
There's not a lot of snow peas being grown right now. Snap peas are like the big thing that's super popular, and of course shelling peas. Yes, early spring and winter is when we grow them here in our kind of coastal climate here. Mm-hmm. It used to be like in Santa Maria, those fields were loaded. I mean, that was like pea heaven. Everybody was growing snap peas. It was like big, big business. There's been some pests that have come into the area and in the soil that have started to affect vitality of the snap pea crops. And I think a lot of people have kind of given up on them. They just start getting rust and mildew, and it's just been challenging to grow them. We've had a lot of challenges growing them as well, but you know, they're super popular and they're, you know, everybody wants them. So we keep trying, but they're a lot of work. I mean, they're really tedious because they're vines, so you have to build a support for them. You got to put in stakes, and then you have to come around every 10 days to 2 weeks and string them because they don't grab onto the stakes by themselves. You have to build a trellis along the row as they're growing, and then you're waiting for them to flower, and then they make the pods, and then it's very tedious to harvest. At least you don't have to bend over to harvest them because they're up high. So each pod harvested by hand, it doesn't weigh very much. I think a lot of people would say that that wouldn't be their favorite crop to grow.
Right.
It's definitely not my favorite crop to grow, but I do love to eat them. So
yes,
we keep growing them.
I love eating them too. But now we're off to look at dried beans. When I did the episode on pinquito beans all those years ago, I didn't get to see the beans in the field. This was my opportunity to see the fascinating production of dried beans.
these are a dried bean.
Oh, look at these.
Yeah, so these ones are drying. And I believe these are the pintos. Yeah.
Oh.
So these beans are dried. And obviously, these are the kind of beans you eat, pinto beans. We boil them up and we eat them. We let them dry on the vine or on the bush. These are bush beans until the husks are brittle and dry, and then we'll thresh them and we bag them up and sell them as dried beans. This is also legume.
Okay, they're very pretty.
Yeah, aren't they pretty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they are pinto beans. They're just a different type because they have less red and more white.
You know, I think that it's just because they are still curing here.
Okay.
These ones, let's see, these ones I think are Flor de Mayo. Oh no, these are Peruano beans.
Ooh, I learned about those a couple years ago.
Yeah, these beans are really good.
They
are,
and they cook very quickly.
Mm-hmm, they do. Well, you know, the thing with beans, almost all beans, when they're fresh, cook a lot faster than beans that have been sitting on in a bag on a grocery store shelf for a while. These ones are still, as you can see, the plants are still green, and some of the pods are still green, so they got a ways to go before they're ready to harvest.
How long of a crop are these beans?
To green pods, it's probably about 80 days, and then to the drying stage where we can actually harvest them as dried beans, it's probably another 20 to 30 days after that. It's a pretty long crop, 3 to 4 months, 4 months.
So for the dried beans, as an aside, when I did my pinkito bean episode, I found out that the dried beans don't taste good fresh. They only taste good after they've been dried. So I did learn that.
Yeah.
But I didn't go out into the field like this.
Uh-huh.
So for dried beans, you kind of like, you're doing something that you wouldn't think you would do in a normal garden because you're just letting it go way past and all the plant life has died. And then you harvest, right?
Yes. Well, yes. To a certain extent, the plant life has died. I mean, you still have the seeds.
Right.
Seeds are still viable.
Yeah.
They're still alive.
Can you harvest them when they're fresh and then dry them?
No. When they're fresh, let's see, like this one right here is still green.
Uh-huh.
And see how it's flat?
Yeah.
It hasn't formed a bean yet. I don't know what it would taste like if you tried to eat it. Probably very starchy, but it's, you know, it's just a tiny little thing. It hasn't really formed anything.
Oh,
this one's starting to go. There are varieties of beans that are really good fresh. You know, you shell them, like cranberry beans. I don't know if you've heard of cranberry beans.
I've heard of them, but I've never had them.
There's definitely some varieties that are good, and these probably would be good fresh when they're fully formed, and then they don't take as long to cook.
Right.
They're actually considered quite a delicacy, but it's a lot easier for us to save these and sell them over a long period of time if we dry them. And they're not a variety that's known for using fresh.
When will these be available at the stand?
Probably this one will be soon. But there's a couple of crops that have already been harvested. So we have Flor de Mayo, Pinto, and Peruano. I think both of those are available right now.
This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian at Halcyon Farms in Arroyo Grande, learning lots about legumes with Aurelia Gottschalk. The next legume surprised me. We're standing in front of jicama, and I was interested in jicama because it's popular in California, particularly in Mexican dining, but, you know, nobody knows what it is, right? So that's right. Jicama is a legume. That crunchy, nutty, slightly sweet root vegetable is a legume, but you don't eat the pulses. This looks like lima beans.
Right. It's related to beans. It's a legume. These pods that you see on top of the jicama are the seeds that will be harvested for next year's planting. And you can see it has these little flowers that are purple and they look like pea flowers. That also indicates that it's a legume. So a legume is just a kind of plant. But this legume in particular is grown for its roots. The jicama is the root of the plant and it grows under the ground. And interestingly about jicama is everything on the jicama plant is poisonous, except for the root. So you don't want to eat the leaves, you don't want to eat the beans, you don't want to eat the flowers. In fact, I don't think I see any bees on these flowers at all. I'm not sure if it's poisonous for them, but I've almost never seen a bee come to the jicama flower. Oh, see, now there is a monarch butterfly on the jicama flower. There we go. Well, interesting. So monarchs actually are poisonous. they have that certain design that indicates to birds that they're poisonous, so the birds don't eat them. So I wonder if that has something to do with why they would like jicama flowers.
Maybe that's their bird kryptonite, is they're like, yes. I'm going to do jicama.
They found the one jicama patch in all of Slow County. You probably shouldn't put this on the air because this is not very scientific. You might have scientists calling up and saying, absolutely not, that is false data.
Well, I have a science degree, chemistry degree,
oh,
so
okay.
I'll be
well,
the
maybe
first.
You know.
I'll be the first one to say that's probably not right.
The root itself is very sweet. It's crunchy. When you pull it out of the ground, it's obviously dirty on the outside because it's grown in the dirt. You wash it off. You peel the outer layer of it, and then what's inside is like a white, crispy, kind of like apple type flesh. It's very crunchy. It almost has an apple flavor, but it's not really that sweet. It's a unique flavor. A lot of people will put lime on it and some hot chili, tahine, something like that on there, and then eat it as like a snack food. I mean, I think it's great without anything on it. I just peel it and eat it. I think it's delicious. And it's very popular at our farm stand. People love it. This jicama that we dig the morning before we sell it is pretty much the best jicama you can get.
How do you harvest it?
You just dig it out of the ground with like a little shovel.
So these pods, it literally looks like lima beans on the outside.
Right. Well, that's a legume for you. It is. It's a bean plant, except for you don't eat these beans, you eat the root.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you know when it's ready?
When it starts flowering, then you know it's ready to start harvesting.
So this plant is the opposite of like every other plant on the planet, because when it starts flowering for other plants, that's the beginning of their growth.
Yes. So like a tomato, you need a flower that is pollinated by something from another tomato flower to make the fruit. But this isn't a fruit. This is a root. So it's a little bit different. Potatoes are actually similar to jicama in that when you plant potatoes, they also make flowers. And that's how you know when you can start digging new potatoes is when you get flowers on the plant.
Okay. And so is this right? So we've got about 2.5 inches in diameter and about...
This is a little bit smaller than the normal jicama that we have for sale, but still perfectly good. We generally have them a little bit, I would say 3 or 4 inches.
What made you decide to plant jicama?
Because of our foreman, Raul. He is our jicama guru. So Raul started growing jicama just as a little patch to have for his family. Being from Mexico, he learned as a kid how to grow it. And then he had a lot of extra. And we said, oh, well, let's sell it at the farm stand too, because people will like it. That small patch that Raul grew has now turned into 3,500 square feet of jicama. So that's why we grow jicama. This is not something that is in my wheelhouse of knowledge. Raul, he basically taught us how to do it.
Does it require any special skills that you did not have?
Well, not really. It's not a difficult plant. You know, you put the plugs in the ground, the little plants, you water them, you fertilize them, you watch them grow. There's a little bit of timing that's involved with it in terms of like when you plant in the season. It's a long crop. It takes 8 months or so to be able to get. Yeah, so these were planted early spring. You know, you have to be mindful about frost and cold and the amount of water that they're getting. But that's like any crop almost that we grow out here. So I wouldn't say there's anything real special about it. And once it gets going, it really is a great producer.
8 months is a long time, so I'm assuming that you only do one crop a year?
We only do one crop a year. Long crops like that can be difficult only because of weed competition, so there's a lot of weeding that happens in the jicama. We have to come through and weed probably 3 or 4 times over the course of the season just to keep the weed pressure down because it's here for such a long period of time.
And then do you, at the end of the season, just plow this under?
Mm-hmm, yep. Hopefully we'll sell it all. It'll all be gone. And then we plow it under and we'll plant something different here next year. So we won't plant jicama in the same spot because it does take certain things out of the soil, being a root crop. We want to grow something here that's not a root crop, maybe some broccoli, lettuce, that kind of thing here. And then we'll bring the jicama back maybe in 3 or 4 years. It could come back to the same spot, but not for a while at least.
You mentioned there's 3,500 square feet. I don't know what that is in acres. And it's all going to be ready at the same time.
Well, It's not all ready at the same time. Oh, I mean, okay. It holds in the ground, which is one of the nice things about this crop is that, yeah, most of it's ready. Some of it will be bigger. You know, you can kind of feel underneath and feel, oh, this one feels nice and big. So we'll selectively harvest to a certain extent. It does hold for a period of time, as long as it doesn't freeze, which we don't usually get freezes here for quite a while, if ever. So we can harvest it as we need it for the farm stand to sell.
Will all this jicama go through the farm stand, or do you have like restaurant customers as well?
Yeah, oh yeah, some restaurants buy from us for sure the jicama. Most of it will go direct to the customers through the farm stand.
What a day at the farm. I ate green beans in the field, I saw withering plants producing the dried beans I cook on a regular basis, and I learned something that I was completely unaware of, that the tasty root vegetable jicama is a legume. I wonder if the bean song applies to jicama too.
Bed and they exploded.
This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm playing with food.